door than one who isn't so certain of his future. Silt, I roared. Drop that weapon and surrender yourself. That's an order. Silt flinched, and his eye groups peered at me in surprise. You are no longer in command here, McGill. You abandoned us. No officer could be so callous and self-serving. It did occur to me then that Bloodworlders were accustomed to being watched at all times. When I'd fought with them before on Dust World, Earth, and Blood World, they'd always floundered when there was a lack of leadership. Whereas a typical human might be relieved to have his CO take the day off, men like these heavy troopers who were now shuffling around in confusion were stressed and uncertain when faced with freedom. It is you who are out of line, Squid, I roared at him. Surrender that weapon. Cooper was at my side, crouching and aiming. Most of the rest of the humans had their weapons in tight hands, but they weren't aiming at Silt. This was clearly because the biggest threat was the Bloodworlders. They weren't sure what to do. They were standing with Silt, who had been their direct commander for most of their time in the Legion. Still, they knew a power struggle was going on, and they didn't know what they should do about it. I lowered my rifle and strode confidently into the middle of the group. Standing between the humans and Silt with his Bloodworlders, I raised my palms, gesturing for calm. Everyone just settle down. We're going to get out of this.
Are you promising to lead us up?
Silt asked, raising a tentacle aloft. The tip pointed to the dusty roof.
Back to the sunlight, such as it is in this pathetic star system.
Eventually, sure, I said. I'll do my damnedest to get all of you out of here.
He lies, Silt said. He will take you further down, into the depths.
Turning to face him, I stared down the muzzle of his gun. Squid, you're getting on my nerves.
Nonsensical insults, vague promises. A leader takes action, and he never shows fear.
Reaching out, I slapped his gun aside. Cephalopods had bad tempers and bad attitudes. Well, they were pretty much the assholes of the galaxy, in my experience. Silt was no exception when it came to these character flaws. He lashed out with a tentacle which caught me a glancing blow in the breastplate. A lesser man would have been knocked flat. As it was, a crease appeared in my armor. Still, Silt had made an error. If he'd killed me in that instant, possibly the Bloodworlders would have backed him, as he would have been the leader in their eyes. But what they saw was a subordinate attacking an officer. Quick as a cat, one of them drew his thick saber. It flashed through the dusty air. The tentacle that had dared to strike me was sliced clean off. It fell to the floor, where it writhed like a giant dying worm, caked up with blood and dirt. That was it for good old sub-veteran Silt. The Bloodworlders reached out with their massive hands and latched onto him. Silt tried to get his rifle in line with my body, but while he could have overpowered any single trooper, he couldn't handle a squad of them. Struggling, cursing, and spilling ink and blood, he put on quite a show. The hulking Bloodworlders all looked at me like grade schoolers for orders and guidance. It was an unfortunate moment for old Silt, because I was ready to take the chance they would have me for the new boss. Setting my jaw, I made the hard call, the one that Graves wouldn't have hesitated to make. Execute him, I said. They went straight to work. Their sabers rose and fell, flashing and thudding into meat. He was hacked apart, and soon converted into the biggest pile of raw calamari I'd ever had the displeasure of laying eyes on.
Ew, Carlos said, walking up behind me. Remind me to stay off your shit list.
You're a permanent fixture there, Ortiz, I said.
How did you know?
Cooper asked me. Know what?
That they'd follow you. That these retarded apes would turn on the Squid and not you.
Now, as most folks who know me well might suspect, I hadn't known exactly how things would play out.
Quite often, in fact, when I pulled a ballsy showdown stunt like this, I ended up as dead as that fish-smelling meat pile in the dirt behind me. But admitting such a thing wouldn't do anything to raise my mystique. Accordingly, I shrugged, and I lied. "You've got to read your troops, Cooper," I said. "These are men. They might not be summa cum laude, but they're men just the same. Earlier today, I threw your ass down into a pit they'd fallen into, and I charged after. Action, you see? You don't earn respect through words and rules alone. You earn it by taking action they respect."
"You had their back, so they have yours? Is that it?"
"Yeah," I said, and I brushed past them all, walking to the darkest tunnel I could find, one that was pretty much a shaft straight down into blackness. I pointed. "That's where we're going," I said. "Straight down. Straight into the Queen's chamber."
"I totally fucking knew it," Carlos muttered.
"You and me both," Cooper chimed in. I ignored them. They could complain if they wanted to. In the end, they'd follow me. And that was all that mattered.
Chapter 43. Our approach became simple as we advanced deeper into the nest. Whenever we found a steeper, darker tunnel, we took it. Using this straightforward rule, we managed to plunge rapidly into the ground. I had no idea how deep we were after an hour or so, and I don't think Kiwi did either, despite her casual estimates.
"We have to be below ground level," she said. "As much as a kilometer below, by my calculations."
"What are you judging that on?" Kiwi shrugged.
"My pedometer, the average angle of descent, and a few other things, like the temperature of the dirt."
"Yeah, but you can't go by Earth normal on all that. We could be..."
I know, it's my best guess."
She seemed a little snappy, so I let it go. Maybe it would be good for morale if at least one of us pretended to know where we were. It was at the start of the second hour that we made contact with the enemy again. I had a few probing scouts ahead of us, and one of them ran back, puffing.
"Sir," she said, "we've got something below, in the next chamber down."
"What did you see?"
"I don't know. Lights, noise. It sounded like drilling."
I squinted at her. "Cooper!" He trotted right by me without stopping. "Where are you going?" I demanded. "To go die in a hole. You were sending me down to investigate, weren't you, adjunct?"
Yeah, go ahead."
We halted our march, set up for an ambush, and waited for Cooper to come back. Or not. I had Kiwi tail him with a buzzer, so I was able to see what he discovered only a few minutes after he found it.
"Lights," Kiwi said. "Volbites don't use lights underground. Do you think..."
"Just watch. Let him do his job." We watched tensely, and at last two light troopers spotted Cooper sneaking up on them and almost shot him dead. He surrendered, identified himself, and then a figure came marching up. I whistled long and low.
"Graves, would you look at that?"
I spun around, showing my tapper feed to anyone who seemed interested.
"You think I'm crazy, do you? Look at this. Graves is below us. He's been moving faster. You're a bunch of whiners."
Marching down the steepest path, I soon caught up to Cooper, who was reporting to Graves.
"Ah, McGill," Graves said. "About time you got down here. We're close to the Queen. Every indicator shows it."
What indicators are those, sir?"
Kiwi asked him. He looked at her flatly.
"You should know. Insects release heat, smells. We've been using our tappers to measure bodily odors and rising heat levels. That's how we know something big is ahead. A large concentration of the enemy, at the very least."
Kiwi squirmed and nodded. She escaped as soon as she could. She hadn't thought of any of those things. Surprising no one, we discovered Natasha was guiding Graves. She'd always been a more capable tech than Kiwi. Fortunately, Kiwi wasn't too jealous about that. She only got jealous of another woman if too many guys were checking her out.
"Cooper here tells me you had some trouble with your blood worlders."
"Sub-veteran Silt was the troublemaker, not them," I said firmly. "These boys were loyal. They corrected Silt. who now sees the error of his ways clearly. Graves chuckled.
He does he? Good. Come on.
Graves showed me his setup. He had about 2 full units worth of troops with him. Winslay, to my surprise, was one of the centurions who'd survived. It didn't shock me to find Winslay was still breathing. He was a clever weasel. What did surprise me was he hadn't managed to slip away and vanish yet. Graves seemed to read my mind.
A man tends to be very loyal when he faces a solid perming. I think he suspected that if he had, reversed course, I might not report the body scan if he turned up dead.
As good a theory as any, Primus.
Anyway, I'm glad you made it this far, McGill. It took you long enough to get down here, seeing as your unit was one of the first to enter the cone and invade the nest. But I guess you had a rough time of it, is that right?
Right, sir, I said. I was annoyed at his unspoken suggestion. My team had been lollygagging. But I managed to keep my voice neutral. What's the plan going forward?
It's pretty simple, really. We're going to march down into the Queen's chamber and take her out. We estimate there's no more than 1,000 Vulbites with her, sort of a last-ditch royal guard.
Did you say 1,000, sir?
Nothing wrong with your ears, at least. Now, do you want to know who's taking point as we assault the egg chamber?
I blinked, and then I got it. My team, sir?
That's a generous offer, McGill. I expected nothing less. But no. No, your team can't do it. Hell no. All you have is a bunch of lights and a half-wild squad of littermates. I'm sending a weaponeer platoon with a full unit of armored troops. I want to light up these bugs with heavy guns right from the start.
Ah, I see, sir.
Don't worry,
he said, utterly misreading my expression.
You'll get your chance for revenge before we're through.
Suddenly a throat was cleared behind us. We both looked, and we saw Winslay standing near.
Excuse me, Primus, he said smoothly, but do I understand that the term leadership is involved here?
What do you want to say, Centurion?
Graves demanded.
Just that if there is to be a secondary prong to this attack, I should be commanding it. I am, after all, the second highest ranked officer present.
A glorious charge?
Graves asked.
Certain death with distinction? That's what you're demanding, Winslay? I'm impressed.
Ah, perhaps there's been a misunderstanding.
Yes, there has been. Now go manage those weaponeers. Make sure they lay those charges right, or you'll get to set them off with your own sidearm.
Winslay beat a hasty retreat, and Graves turned back to face me.
Do we understand each other, McGill?
We sure do. But is there no way we can discuss surrender with these beings, sir? Graves gave me a hard look, just as he'd done with Winslay.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that, McGill. I'm also going to pretend I'm not having second thoughts about your leadership skills right now. Is that clear?
Crystal, Primus.
Good. Take a short break and organize your men. Have you got any wounded?
I hesitated. Being wounded wasn't the best thing to be when you were near Graves. No, sir, I lied with bright confidence. Our wounded didn't make it this far down.
Okay, that's for the best. I plan to put Harris's worst cases on our front lines to absorb the initial shock of their counterattack.
We're expecting a counterattack? He frowned up at me.
Of course. This is the Queen's egg chamber. These bugs are going to go suicidally ape when they realize we're here to destroy it all.
Stands to reason. How are we going to deploy, sir? He pointed to a series of weaponeers. They were working with the floor of the chamber, scraping at it and setting cubes in the dirt. Winslade was directing them, which they didn't seem too happy about.
Charges?
I asked. They're setting up charges?
Right. The egg chamber is directly below us. We've been using sensors to assess the shape and general layout. The main assault troops are going to rush the chamber down that wide tunnel over there. But you're going down even faster.
I eyed the weaponeers as they set their charges.
You're going to blow the roof open? What if it collapses?
Even better, he said. Our work will be done for us.
Okay, I said, taking a deep breath. Assuming we get down there alive, what are our orders? Again, he looked at me oddly.
To kill everything that crawls. What else?
Everything?
Everything. Don't miss a single egg. We can't tell which one might be a new queen.
My mouth set to a firm line, but I nodded. I didn't like killing civvies, not even insectal ones. But this was a desperate moment, and I could hardly pretend I was some kind of saint. After all, I did help vaporize the last Vulbite nest from orbit with Nostrum's broadsides. What if they try to surrender, sir? I asked. What then? Graves shook his head bemusedly.
When you see them hold their pinchers up over their heads, you can arrest them, McGill.
I nodded in disappointment. Graves was right. In my long years, I'd never seen a colony of biting ants surrender to an exterminator. They always fought to the bitter end. While the troops worked to prepare, I talked to Natasha. She was full of information, as usual.
Nostrum is on point above this spot in orbit. She's waiting with her broadsides trained on this nest, she said. They aren't going to allow us to fail. If we don't report back that the queen was destroyed with proof, they'll blast this hive open.
And us with it, I said glumly.
That's right. Apparently you started a trend.
Yeah. I think that's why Deitch let me catch a revive. It's her way of admitting I was right without saying it. But, hey, how do you know what's going on aboard Nostrum? We don't have radio contact, do we?
She smiled.
We've got something better. Come look.
She led me to a pair of humming jump gate posts. Between them hung a cloudy region of pink-gray light.
These connect to Nostrum's loading deck, she explained.
We can get reinforcements, then?
If Deitch would release more of them, maybe we could, she admitted. But the word is, the brass on Gold Deck figures they've spent enough time and equipment on this hole in the ground. There are a lot more nests left after this one. If we don't finish soon, they'll use the guns again, end of story.
I walked up and marveled at the posts. Such small, simple-looking devices. As alien tech marvels went, jump gates were hard to beat. At least we can retreat through them back up to the ship, right? I asked.
If we kill the queen, I'm sure we can.
For just a second, I considered taking another unscheduled jaunt, but I knew that wouldn't work, not this time. There were sure to be troops up there waiting, and Deitch wasn't the kind who took jokes well.
The charges are set, Winslade shouted triumphantly. Time to report our status to Nostrum, Natasha said.
She dug out a buzzer from her pack and set it on the ground near the jump gate. Shivering its wings as it walked, it traveled through the gateway and vanished. A few seconds went by. I checked my guns and I almost walked away to marshal my troops, but then I noticed that Natasha was frowning. What's wrong?
My buzzer should be back by now, she said.
That quick?
Yes. It's programmed to walk through, transmit my report, and then turn right around and walk back, 10 seconds tops. It's been gone nearly a minute.
I looked at the gateposts. What could be going on aboard Nostrum?
Why don't you step through and have a look? I suggested.
That's against orders. Deitch is all paranoid about unauthorized use of the jump gates for some reason.
That made me give my head a scratch. Could she know, or at least suspect, that I'd use these jump gates improperly on several occasions? It wouldn't be the first time an officer invented a rule of conduct forbidding something I'd done. Losing patience, I stepped toward the jump gate.
Don't, James. You're already in enough trouble.
What's Deitch going to do, bust me down to specialist?
Maybe.
Stop worrying. I'll be right back. So saying, I stepped into the pink-gray shifting haze, and I vanished. Chapter 44 An instant later, I was back on the deck of Nostrum.
I don't mind telling you, it was a good feeling to be out of that hole in the ground the Volbites called home. Just in case there were surprised guards on the far side waiting for some kind of unplanned bug invasion, I had my rifle slung and my hands up. But there was no one there to greet me. Instead of personnel, I saw flashing lights and wailing klaxons. The floor was lit up with a dozen different colored arrows showing where techs, soldiers, and regular crewmen were supposed to report.
"Battle stations," the ship's computer said. "All personnel are to report to battle stations."
Confused, I took another step forward, and that's when I heard a crunch. Looking down, I saw my foot had located Natasha's buzzer. It had been doing 360s, crawling around in a loop. Probably it had been attempting to deliver what it considered a critical message and failing to do so. My tapper lit up about then as it synced with the ship's network. I used it to catch the emergency feed. A vid began to stream on my forearm. It showed the scene outside, but it was too small to make out much. With a tossing motion of my arm, I relayed the stream to the walls of the chamber I was in. Every blank surface aboard Nostrum was a kind of screen if you wanted it to be. We usually used them to display the stars outside in a scenic fashion, but they could also be used to deliver briefings or other information. What I saw outside in space, beyond Nostrum's hull, made my jaw sag wide. "Enemy ships?" I asked, talking to myself. There was no one on the deck. They'd all run off to take defensive combat positions. Peering at the ships, I came to realize it was more than a squadron or a wing. It was a fleet. There had to be 50 ships. No, 70. They were still rising up, circling into view over Dark World's horizon. The configuration of the vessels was strange to me. They weren't rounded or delta-winged. They resembled flying parallelograms, oblong bricks of metal with a forward-leaning cant to the prow. In my opinion, they were sort of mean-looking. Right off, I knew what I had to be looking at. "Rigel's fleet," I said, stunned. I didn't know what to do. Heart pounding, I looked at the bent, crushed buzzer which I'd picked up, then glanced at the jump gate, which still glimmered nearby. I thought about trying to contact Turov or Deitch, but I realized there wasn't time. In fact, they probably wouldn't even care about what was happening back on Dark World at this point. Flashes began outside in space. They were silent, but I could tell the approaching ships were firing at us. Missiles? Railgun darts? I wasn't sure, and I didn't think it mattered. We were outnumbered 70, no, make that more like 100 to 1. More were still rising up, out over the planet's purple horizon. Coming to a sudden decision, I spun around and launched myself toward the jump gate. At that moment, the world jumped. The deck came right up and smacked me in the face. For a second, I thought the ship had taken a hit. But no, I knew that sound, that kick. They'd fired the broadsides. 16 fusion shells were away, traveling with fantastic speeds to meet the approaching fleet. I could see them streaking away from our ship toward the approaching fleet. Nostrum was designed along the lines of an Imperial warship. Possibly Earth had built it that way because we knew it best. The functionality of the ship was more than that of a transport. It was technically a dreadnought-class vessel. Imperial ships were built to operate in formations of similar ships. They didn't have much in the way of small, independent, or defensive armament. They were built to either bombard a planet or stand in line with 1,000 others and blast away in unison. As a result, Nostrum had one single, hard punch in her, and she'd just sent it hurtling toward the Rigelians. I got up to my knees and did a scrambling crawl toward the jump gate. Why? Partly to keep on breathing for another few minutes. But it wasn't just that. A ground trooper was as useless as a 1-inch cock in a space battle. I much preferred to be on solid ground where my rifle at least had a chance to affect the outcome of events. Getting to my hands and knees, I half crawled, half fell toward the gateway. In the last instant, my rolling eyes caught a silent gush of white incandescence. Out there in space, we'd nailed one of the enemy vessels. Then I found myself pitching and rolling in the dirt. My right boot was smoking, and I trailed it behind me.
McGill! Natasha called out, grabbing me and rolling me onto my back. What did you do?
I held up her buzzer, crushed to a nearly unrecognizable state.
I ran into a little trouble, I said.
She grabbed up the buzzer. She examined it while growling, then slapped me a hard one. It was a good thing I was wearing a helmet, as she only managed a glancing blow.
What did you do? Step on it?
Yep. But listen to me. I told her what I'd seen. She stared, and although she didn't want to believe me, I could tell by her eyes that she did. Graves came to see what the ruckus was about before I was done, and I showed him my Tapper video. I'd been wise enough to walk through to Nostrum with my suit cameras rolling, just in case there was a misunderstanding.
I don't believe it, he said. How do you make these things happen, McGill?
What? Me? He shook his head and waved me off. He walked away, thinking hard. When he spun back on one heel, the light of determination had returned to his face.
It doesn't matter, he said. We're going to execute our mission regardless.
I said. I think it does kind of matter, sir. Nostrum appears to have just been destroyed. That means no commanders, no revival machines, two legions wiped.
He came close and glared up at me. Is that all you think about? Your next squalid life? Earth is in a war out here. A real war. An interstellar war.
Yes, sir, I agreed. But I don't think getting ourselves permed as fast as possible is our best course of action at this point.
Fortunately, as the senior officer present, I'm in command. You'll follow my orders.
I heaved a sigh. For a few seconds, I thought about killing him on the spot. I could probably do it, but I didn't want to. Graves probably knew what I was thinking. He stared back at me, watching my eyes, daring me to do something.
Primus, I said,
I think our best course would be to warn Earth, if at all possible. He got into my face.
Agreed, if it was possible, which it's not. Our second best option, maybe even first in my estimation, is to complete our mission as assigned.
A few thousand volbites more or less isn't going to change the outcome of this.
McGill, I know you've got a soft spot for aliens. I don't get it. Almost no one does. Under different circumstances, I might even find it commendable. But today, right here and now, I need to know if you're up to following my orders.
He had his hand on his sidearm. When Graves did that, he wasn't fooling around. He meant business, and he didn't care if a disobedient soldier such as myself was merely inconvenienced by a trip through a revival machine, or permed.
All right, sir, I said. I came back to die with my troops. I'm willing to do so.
Good to hear it. Now get over there with the weaponeers. I'm accelerating our schedule. The heavies will rush the egg chamber, and 1 minute after they engage the defenders in a firefight, you'll blast your way down and lead a secondary attack on their flank.
Got it, Primus.
McGill, one more thing. Take out the Queen first. Ignore the enemy flank. Just kill the target. If we all die here, well, we'll have at least completed our mission. Clear?
Yes, sir. She's as good as dead. He stomped off and gathered a few hundred men to make the rush down a long, dusty, curving ramp. I moved towards the weaponeers, but Natasha stopped me with a gentle touch.
James, I think I might be able to do something.
What do you mean? I asked.
You know, about getting a message through to Earth.
I blinked twice.
Really?
How? Can't explain now. I just thought I'd tell you. I'll be working on it.
My face split into a grin. I grabbed her shoulder, but I didn't squeeze. I didn't want to hurt her.
That makes this easier, I told her.
Go for it, girl. If anyone can come up with a tech trick, it's you. I meant all that I'd said. But I didn't believe her. She was probably just trying to make me feel better. Natasha was like that, always thinking of others. She wanted me to have hope. So I acted like I had it. But it was all horse shit. Chapter 45. Graves led his attack right on time. Every armored troop he had rushed down a dirty ramp into the darkness. They were 100-plus strong, but it didn't seem like nearly enough. Down below, a firefight broke out right away. The bugs were waiting for us, of course. They'd set up ambushes using stealth suits, and when that failed, they rushed the human troops by the hundreds. To make matters worse, the Volbites guarding the egg chamber seemed to be of a different breed. Mostly, they were bigger. They were granddaddy Volbites, the size of draft horses in some cases. When a 1,000-pound insect charges at you, you damn well know you've been tackled. I watched the vid feed of the action below on my tapper, and even though it was hard to make out details, things looked pretty bleak. Darkness, dust, screams, utter chaos reigned. Pinches like twin curved swords clashed and screeched on armor. Legs were pulled off. Heads gushed blood, then struggles ceased, and they moved on to catch another legionnaire. Plenty of Volbites died as well, but not enough to change the math. We were outnumbered and outmassed. Ignoring these realities, I watched the counter I'd set up. 1 minute after the fight had begun, I signaled the weaponeers. The charges popped like flashbangs, and dust obscured everything. Long before it had cleared, I rushed in the midst of it all and fell, more than jumped, into a hole. Crashing down heavily into the chamber below, I scrambled to get out of the way. More troops were coming down, one every second, and they'd trample me if I didn't move my tail. Rolling, climbing to my feet, and then throwing myself down behind the first cover I saw, I tried to get my bearings. The main fight wasn't far off, only 50 meters away to my left. There was so much dust, darkness, and confusion, I could only see the blazing guns and force blades. The Volbites seemed to be out of sophisticated weaponry, but they didn't need much of that down here in their lair. Where was the queen? That was my biggest thought. Twisting, peering, I saw a pile of white, crystalline objects. They were stacked up like diamonds the size of footballs. Could those be eggs? They had to be. Beyond the egg pile, off to the rear of the chamber, something big stirred. When I say big, I mean bigger than an elephant. Bigger than a blue whale, even. Segmented, brown, and shiny, the carapace rippled, revealing a long, long body. It, no, she, made me think of tales of dragons found in the depths of the earth. If anything had ever resembled a dragon in its lair, it was the Volbite Queen. My twin stabbing chest lights ran up the length of the beast to the head, which was a good 3 meters above the floor of the chamber. Sensing the light, the head swung in my direction. Black, intelligent eyes hove into view. She saw me. I sensed it, and I knew it was true. My first move was to heave a grav grenade at the monster. It flipped and landed under the midsection. A moment later, a blue pulsing flash exploded. Grabbing up every pebble and fragment of rock, even the sand grains, it weaponized them all and showered them in every direction with great force. The queen shivered and released a strange sound. It wasn't a howl, not exactly. It was more like a deep, warbling groan. That throat was so huge the sounds were a very low bass, painful to the ear even through my helmet. At least a squad's worth of light troops had joined my picnic by now. They tossed more grenades after mine and unleashed hammering sprays with their snap rifles. But the monster wasn't showing any signs of dying. To the contrary, as our attacks increased, so did her speed of motion. I got the feeling we were pissing her off, not killing her. How many pins would you have to stick into a man before he died? A hell of a lot, that's my guess. Our weapons weren't punching big enough holes. Tiny wounds, even a lot of them, weren't doing the job. In the meantime, the tenor of the struggle at the front of the chamber had changed. The number of flashes and the raging sound of hungry vulbites softened. I turned to look over my shoulder. I knew I shouldn't have, but I did it. I couldn't help myself.
"They're coming to save her,"
Cooper said, grabbing my arm in panic.
"What do we do, sir?"
That was it. The question every officer must have an answer for every second of any battle he's in. "Snap rifles, lay down suppressing fire on the vulbite guards," I roared. "We're not killing that queen with these pop guns anyway." Cooper and the rest redirected their fire. They blazed away, weapons chattering on full auto. Some vulbites fell and thrashed in the dirt, stricken, but just as many climbed over them and kept coming. We'd had the poor manners to attack their queen. We had to die, and it didn't matter to them if they died getting us killed. They were in a frenzy. A few weaponeers had come down with us. They didn't have belchers, unfortunately. All the heavy weaponry had gone with Graves into the main assault. What they did have, I soon saw, were satchels of explosives. Whatever was left after they'd blown a hole in the floor and allowed us into this pit. Grabbing up a satchel, I started to trot with it, but a strong arm yanked me back.
"Sargon, that's my kid, sir."
"You dumbass. All right, you've been volunteered. Come with me and die gloriously."
"Thank you, adjunct, sir."
He ran after me, his satchel banging into his legs. We approached the queen, who reared up and hissed at our approach.
"String her up with another set of those cube bombs of yours," I ordered.
She doesn't look cooperative, sir. You should have thought of that before you yanked my chain."
Sargon scuttled forward, cursing. He didn't lay the charges at the queen's feet, which consisted of 100 or so thrashing limbs, each the size of a thick tree branch. He tossed them under her body instead. He got out a detonator, fumbled open the lid, and that was it for him. Two massive blades like curved scythes scissored where he'd been standing, and he fell, cut in half. Cursing, I rushed up, firing my snap rifle in bursts. The queen reared up, and I saw the gory ruin of her belly. It ran with yellow ichor from 100 injuries. What I did next would be a familiar move for any ball player. I feinted left and dove right. It was simple enough. She lunged that hulking body where she thought I should have been, but wasn't. She was too big to reverse herself, as her mass and nervous system was by nature slower than mine. Her twin curved blades furrowed the dirt, and I landed on the detonator. Fumbling, I almost didn't get it off in time. The queen was rearing up again, ready to strike like a snake. But then, a ripple of explosions went off right under her. She collapsed, stone dead. Chapter 46. There's something particularly satisfying when a man brings down the biggest baddie, the one that defeated all the rest. I basked in that glow for several long seconds, staring at the dead queen. I didn't bother to glance over my shoulder. What would have been the point? I fully expected a horrid and well-deserved death was coming up behind me. Graves's attack had faltered. The guards were rushing my light troopers. I could still hear them firing sporadically, but that was a joke. Once the vulbites got to my recruits, they'd tear them apart. They were green, lightly armed, and didn't even have metal suits to protect them. That left no one of consequence in this dusty football stadium-sized egg chamber, other than me, the Queen Slayer. I just hoped the bugs would make it quick in their righteous fury. After a half minute or so, the chamber fell strangely quiet.
but for some reason the thundering approach of 1,000 churning bug feet didn't come to my ears. Turning around, I took a look at last. My squad of light troops was dead already. That explained that. Graves's team had been overwhelmed as well. I saw a few of them fighting still, down to force blades and standing in tight circles, surrounding hissing Vulbites. "Why'd they stop?" I asked no one in particular. To my surprise, I got an answer.
"Your foul action has confused them," a voice said.
It was a strange voice, a warbling, wet-sounding thing. It was as if a man spoke from underwater. It was the voice of a thing that had been drowned. Looking around and cranking up my suit lights, I located the source at last. A creature stood nearby. It was shaped vaguely like a shaved bear. There were devices on it, clearly technological in nature. The devices were alive? Or maybe they were robotic. They crawled over its skin and peered at me. The robots were like bugs made of alloys and polymers. One resembled a snake's skeleton with jewel-like eyes that lit up redly when they looked at me. It was the metal snake skeleton that spoke. Could it be some kind of translation device? Maybe it was more sophisticated than that. I got the feeling the artificial snake thing was more like my tapper. Standing tall, I whistled at the alien, long and low. "A Rigelian," I shouted. "An honest-to-God Rigelian right here, and I've captured it." The naked bear thing regarded me.
"Captured. You are mistaken, barbarian. You are the one who is my prisoner."
"How do you figure that?" The Rigelian made a gesture toward my snap rifle, which was lying some distance away. He made another motion, indicating the Vulbite guards. So far, they weren't charging at me. They were sliding around in a tightening circle. It was true, though, that their churning legs and undulating bodies were even more creepy to watch when they moved slowly. They seemed to be artificially restrained and full of menace. "These Vulbites can't save you," I said in a tone of utter confidence. "You've come too close. You're as good as dead already, Teddy." The bear cocked its head as it listened to the translation. I'd heard enough to understand when it was speaking and what its language sounded like. The artificial snake bones were clicking together in patterns. That seemed to be how they talked, with clicking sounds. After grasping my meaning, the alien took a half step backward. Immediately I took a half step toward it, but then halted as the Vulbites leaned close. "Hold still or we're both dead," I told him. Smiling, I took an empty juice pack from my ration pouch and held it high. "I only have to crush this trigger, or damage it anyway, to kill you all."
"An explosive? You claim to have an explosive device?"
"That's right. I'm the high officer in charge of this military force. See these bars on my shoulder? That's a double line. That means I'm the primary leader of this entire attack."
"You do not act as a high officer. A true leader slinks unseen behind his minions."
I laughed at him. The snake bones clicked, but I had no idea how it might translate laughter. "That's only in your decadent culture," I said firmly. "My people are warriors. We believe in the supremacy of bravery, sacrifice, and bloodletting." The Rigelian looked around the chamber.
"Your recent actions do uphold that part of your claims," he admitted. "However, you must surely realize that any action on your part that threatens my person..."
"Yeah, yeah," I said, bored already.
Of course your big dumb bugs will tear me up, those that live through the blast. But you won't, and I probably won't either. So I don't care about such consequences.
The bear thing said. Perhaps I have misjudged the situation. Your species might be too feral to be contained. We'd hoped not to have to commit resources sufficient for your expungement, but your actions here today have convinced me I was in error.
Sometimes translations weren't perfect, but I thought I got the gist of what he was saying, and I didn't like it. Expungement, as in removal from the cosmos?
Precisely. You represent a dangerous species, feral, skilled, relentless. We can't have beings such as you interrupting our flow. Sadly, this will be expensive.
I began to get a creepy feeling. Nothing this shaved critter had said so far had concerned me much, as I was generally beyond fearing death. But talk of committing resources to Earth's removal? That grabbed my attention. I'd seen their fleet, after all. Ours was out there, too. Somewhere. If the Rigelians only had the 100 or so ships I'd witnessed, well, we'd be pretty evenly matched. But if they had more, lots more, Earth was doomed. Suddenly I felt the weight of my situation. Meeting the alien had started off as fun and games, a way to tweak my captors and maybe even escape them through trickery. But now things had taken a darker turn. The bear dude was working with his snake now, and it was clicking like there was no tomorrow. I got the feeling he was texting somebody. Maybe making a report. Hold on, I said. We should talk. He paused in his clicking of artificial bones.
Talk about what?
This is the first time two leaders of our respective species have met in person, I believe. This could be a golden opportunity.
I fail to understand your reference to rare metals. Are you offering a ransom for your life?
For about a second, I did some hard thinking. Some people say I'm a gifted liar, but really that's not exactly so. I'm a man with a highly flexible mind, a man who can form his own version of reality on the spot. Usually I did my best work in moments like this, when the stakes were high, and I was completely winging it. No, I said firmly. I'm not offering you payment for my life. That would be dishonorable to my people. As I said, we don't mind sacrificing our lives in battle. We enjoy it.
What, then? I grow impatient with your discordant mind utterances.
Okay. I'll hurry up, then. What I'm suggesting is that we make an exchange. We give the other something of value and then return to our own people.
What can you possibly possess that would interest me?
I waggled my juice box, and I was gratified to see him wince a little. I'll give you this. That will end the threat of death between us. You, in turn, can give me that snake bone thing you have slung around yourself. After a moment of confusion, the Rigelian touched his translator.
This is my interlocutor,
he complained.
Without it, I'm cut off from everyone of importance.
But you can get another one, right? From your ship or something?
It's possible, but inconvenient.
Sucking in a deep breath, I nodded. I understand. I'm bored with all this talk as well, so I'm going to blow both of us up. As I spoke, I lifted the juice box on high. A single droplet fell and splattered in the dirt. It was nice communicating with you and all, but—
Pause a moment,
he said, lifting his own slightly hairy appendage. It was like a paw, but it had a fine down of fur even on the palm. For some reason, I found that disgusting.
Allow me to communicate your offer to my superiors,
he said. I agreed, grudgingly, and he worked his snake. His claw-tipped fingers rattled over the length of it like a pro. He reminded me of a dexterous saxophone player. At last he looked up.
As you are the leader of the enemy ground forces.
Hero, I said, interrupting him. I'm called a hero. That's my official title.
Ah, hero, then, he said. As you are the hero of Earth's ground forces, you will be released when this trade of technological objects is made.
That's not good enough, I said. The creature blinked at me.
But our described arrangement—
I also require my servants. They're in the chamber above us right now. I require them, or I'll be uncomfortable.
The collection of hostiles?
He asked, and I thought maybe the gargling voice was a little put out.
That group of humans is scheduled for slaughter. We were planning on using the biomass to feed these larvae as they hatch.
Well, you're just going to have to feed them Vulbite carcasses instead. The Vulbite guards around us shifted and clacked their mandibles unhappily. Could they be listening in and understanding our discussion? That possibility hadn't occurred to me previously. The Rigelian made a cautioning gesture.
It would be best if you restrained your disgusting suggestions of cannibalism. This nest has suffered enough at your ape hands. I can't be responsible for their actions if you insist on fomenting a group rage state.
Clearly his translator was having problems, but I caught the gist of it. I would no more sacrifice my servants than I would ask you to sacrifice yours, I said. Making a broad gesture, I indicated the disgruntled Vulbites. They shifted around us and clacked irritably.
An acceptable condition,
the Rigelian said.
Now, give me your device.
Nope. Not until my surviving troops, gear and all, are gathered together upstairs. The Rigelian considered and consulted his bones. At last, with the air of someone doing something unpleasant, he led the way up the shaft. As we marched, I called out to any survivors to join me or be permed for good down here. A few did manage to struggle to their feet and follow. Graves wasn't among the living, and for that I was grateful. He hated it when I pulled stunts like this, even when they benefited him personally. He might even blow the whole thing by insisting he was in charge. After a long march, I nearly shit a biscuit as I rounded the last bend and walked into an ambush in the upper chamber. Snap rifle rounds clattered against my breastplate and the wall behind me. Hold your fire, I called out. After a quick recognition ceremony, the Legionnaire guards let us pass. They stared at the bare thing and the hulking Vulbites in disbelief. When I approached Winslade from behind, I heard him admonishing a crew of techs.
You'll get that thing focused and working, or I'll—
Sir?
Natasha said, pointing over his shoulder. He turned in irritation and saw my delegation.
McGill?
He demanded.
Have you made yourself another alien girlfriend?
Winslade, I said in a loud, commanding tone. This is the enemy leader, a Rigelian. I've made arrangements for us to exit this place. The Queen is dead. Our mission is complete.
Oh, really?
Winslade said, putting his hands on his hips. Adjunct McGill strikes again, hey?
Silence, servant, I said. Winslade blinked in shock. I kept talking loudly, outlining the situation. He finally caught on when I got to the part about his pre-scheduled slaughter.
And so the appropriate term for you is hero. Did I hear that rightly?
Yes, I said loudly. Adjunct, another synonym for hero, is difficult for their translators to interpret properly.
That's just excellent, Hero McGill, Winslade said sarcastically. What do we do now?
I think we can make the exchange and be on our way. With a formal air, I turned and handed my juice box to the wary Rigelian.
It's very light.
And delicate, I warned him. Don't jar or jostle it unnecessarily, or you'll go up in a flash. The Rigelian handed me his collection of metallic snake bones, and he took exaggerated care with the juice box. The rest of my Varus people looked at each other in bewilderment. I was almost glad Cooper had bought the farm down below. He was the kind of young man who had trouble keeping his mouth shut at moments like this. Unfortunately, Carlos had survived. As a biospecialist, he was our medic. He hadn't gone down into the egg chamber to fight, as his duty came afterwards during the cleanup. He turned to watch the retreating delegation of aliens and released a dirty laugh.
McGill, you lying sack, he said. These aliens must be the dumbest I've ever—
That was as far as he got because I'd backhanded him one across the mouth. The delegation of aliens paused. The Rigelian turned and stared at us, studying the interchange.
Don't speak to your hero, I admonished Carlos, standing over him, unless you've been commanded to do so.
What the fuck?
Carlos growled, but I put a boot on his throat to quiet him.
Wait until they've gone. Hold on.
Yes. Okay, now you may speak. I led him back up. He came up sputtering.
You're just like that Rigelian, he said, except instead of being a shaved bear, you're a dumb shaved ape.
Sorry I ruffled your feathers, I told him, but I couldn't let him hear you. He bought my line of bullshit, hook, line, and sinker. We have to keep it that way until we can get out of here.
I get that, you retard, but the violence was totally unnecessary.
I almost hit him again. If I hadn't been feeling a bit sorry about stomping on him, I would have.
McGill, Winslade said. Ortiz is right.
What? How so? Winslade lifted up the chain of silvery snake bones that adorned my shoulder.
You said this was his translation device. Once he gave it to you, he couldn't understand what any of us were saying.
I stared and blinked, once, twice, then a third time. Oh, I said.
I'm sorry, Carlos.
It's okay. We're still breathing, for now. But I wonder how long it will take that idiot to figure out he's carrying around your garbage like it's the Holy Grail. I almost wish I could be there to see it.
Carlos walked away, shaking his head and laughing. I looked after him, and then I stared up at the ceiling of the chamber. The surface was at least 2 kilometers straight up. It was going to be quite a hike. Looking around, I saw plenty of wounded. There was no way in hell they could march double time uphill for hours. How were we going to get out of this hole?
Chapter 47. As was too often the case when I engaged in shenanigans, my latest trick was about to backfire on everyone. I could only imagine the rage that would surely overtake a high and mighty character like my friend from Rigel once he realized I'd made an utter fool of him. To brainstorm a solution, Winslade and I held a quick, intense meeting.
McGill, he said, you've outdone yourself this time.
Why, thank you, sir. That's mighty kind of you to say.
It was not meant in any way as a compliment.
We've been guaranteed safe passage out of this anthill, but I don't see how your ruse will hold long enough for us to escape this trap.
I hear you, sir, and I'd like to commend you on taking leadership at this point.
What's this? What are you talking about?
I'm all ears, Centurion.